naked Sue. Shed swallowed hard. She had been used badly. She had lost weight, and her skin was colorless, where not marked with bruises or abrasions. One of the creatures raised her chin, made her look at Shed. Her eyes were hollow and vacant. "The Walking Dead," he whispered. "Is the revenge sweet enough?" the tall creature asked.
"Take her away. I don't want to see her."
The tall being snapped its fingers. Its compatriots retreated into the shadows.
"My money,"
Shed snarled. Chuckling, the being counted coins at Gilbert's feet. Shed scooped them into his pocket. The being said,
"Bring us more live ones, Maron Shed. We have many uses for live ones."
A scream echoed from the darkness. Shed thought he heard his name called.
"She recognized you, friend."
A whimper crawled out of Shed's throat. He vaulted onto the wagon seat, snarled at his mules. The tall creature eyed Lisa with unmistakable meaning. Lisa read it.
"Let's get out of here, Mr. Shed. Please."
"Get up, mules." The wagon creaked and groaned and seemed to take forever getting through the gate. Screams continued echoing from somewhere deep inside the castle. Outside, Lisa looked at Shed with a decidedly odd expression. Shed thought he detected relief, fear, and a little loathing. Relief seemed foremost. She sensed how vulnerable she had been. Shed smiled enigmatically, nodded, and said nothing. Like Raven, he recalled. He grinned. Like Raven. Let her think. Let her worry. The mules halted.
"Eh?"
Men materialized out of the darkness. They held naked weapons, military-type weapons. A voice said,
"I'll be damned. It's the innkeeper."
Chapter 30 Juniper. More trouble. Otto rolled in out of the night.
"Hey, Croker, we got a customer."
I folded my hand but did not throw the cards in.
"You sure?"
I was damn tired of false alarms. Otto looked sheepish.
"Yeah, for sure."
Something was wrong here. "Where is he? Let's have all of it."
"They're going to make it inside."
"They?"
"Man and a woman. We didn't think they were anything to worry about till they were past the last house and still headed uphill. It was too late to stop them then."
I slapped my hand down. I was pissed. There would be hell to pay in the morning. Whisper had had it up to her chin with me already. This might be her excuse to park me in the catacombs, permanently. The Taken are not patient.
"Let's go,"
I said in as calm a voice as I could manage, while glaring a hole through Otto. He made sure he stayed out of reach. He knew I was not pleased. Knew I was in a tight place with the Taken. He did not want to give me any excuse to wrap my hands around his neck.
"I'm going to cut some throats if this gets screwed up again."
We all grabbed weapons and rushed into the night. We had our place picked, in brush, 200 yards below the castle gate. I got the men into position just as somebody started screaming inside.
"Sounds bad," one of the men said.
"Keep it down,"
I snapped. Cold crept my spine. It did sound bad. It went on and on and on. Then I heard the muted jangle of harness and the creak of wheels improperly greased. Then the voices of people talking softly. We jumped out of the brush. One of the men opened the eye of a lantern.
"I'll be damned," I said. "It's the innkeeper."
The man sagged. The woman stared at us, eyes widening. Then she sprang off the wagon and ran.
"Get her, Otto, and heaven help you if you don't. Crake, drag this bastard down. Walleye, take the wagon around to the house. The rest of us will cut across."
The man Shed did not struggle, so I detailed another two men to help Otto. He and the woman were crashing through the brush. She was headed toward a small precipice. She should corner herself there. We led Shed to the old house. Once in the light, he became more deflated, more resigned. He said nothing. Most captives resist detention somehow, if only by denying that there is any reason to detain them. Shed looked like a man who thought he was overdue for the worst. "Sit," I said, and indicated a chair at the table where we had played cards. I took another, turned it, parked myself with forearms atop its back and chin upon my forearms. "We've got you dead, Shed." He just stared at the tabletop, a man without hope. "Anything to say?"
"There's nothing to be said, is there?"
"Oh, I think there's a whole lot. You've got your ass in a sling for sure, but you're not dead yet. You maybe could talk your way out of this."
His eyes widened slightly, then emptied again. He did not believe me.
"I'm not an inquisitor, Shed."
His eyes flickered with momentary life.
"It's true. I followed Bullock around because he knew the buskin. My job had very little to do with his. I couldn't care less about the catacombs raid. I do care about the Black Castle, because it's a disaster in the making, but not as much as I care about you. Because of a man named Raven."
"One of your men called you Croaker. Raven was scared to death of somebody named Croaker that he saw one night when the Duke's men grabbed some of his friends."
So, he'd witnessed our raid. Damn, but I had cut it close to the wind that time. "I'm that Croaker, and I want to know everything you know about Raven and Darling, and everything about anybody else who knows anything." The slightest hint of defiance crossed his face.
"A lot of folks are looking for you, Shed. Bullock isn't the only one. My boss wants you, too, and she's worse trouble than he is. You wouldn't like her at all, and she'll get you if you don't do this right."
I would rather have given him to Bullock. Bullock wasn't interested in our problems with the Taken, but Bullock was out of town.
"There's Asa, too. I want to know everything you haven't told me about him."
I heard the woman cursing in the distance, carrying on like Otto and the guys were trying to rape her. I knew better. They hadn't the nerve after having screwed up once already tonight.
"Who's the slot?"
"My barmaid, she—"
And his story boiled out. Once he started, there was no stopping him. I had a notion how to wriggle out of a potentially embarrassing situation.
"Shut him up." One of the men clamped a hand over Shed's mouth.
"Here's what we're going to do, Shed, assuming you want out of this alive." He waited. "The people I work for will know a body was delivered tonight. They'll expect me to catch whoever did it. I'll have to give them someone. That could be you, the girl, or both of you. You know some things I don't want the Taken to find out. One way I can avoid handing you over is having you turn up dead. I can make that real if I have to, or you can fake it for me. Let the slot see you looking like you've been wrecked. You follow?"
Shaking, he replied, "I think so.
I want to know everything."
"The girl..."
I held up a hand, listened. The uproar was close.
"She won't come back from her meeting with the Taken. There's no reason we couldn't turn you loose once we're done doing what we have to do."
He did not believe me. He had committed crimes he believed deserved the harshest punishment, and he expected it.
"We're the Black Company, Shed. Juniper is going to get to know that real well soon, including the fact that we keep our promises. But that's not important to you. Right now, you want to stay alive long enough to get a break. That means you damned well better fake being dead, and do it better than any stiff you ever hauled up the hill."
"All right.
Take him over to the fire, and make him look like he's had it rough."
The men knew what to do. They sort of scattered Shed around without actually hurting him. I tossed a few things around to make it look like there had been a fight, and finished just in time. The girl came sailing through the doorway, propelled by Otto's fist. She looked the worse for wear. So did Otto and the men I'd sent to help.
"Wildcat, eh?"
Otto tried to grin. Blood leaked from the corner of his mouth.
"Ain't the half of it, Croaker."
He kicked the girl's feet from under her.
What happened to the guy?
Got a little feisty. I stuck a knife in him.
I see.
We stared at the girl. She stared back, the fire gone. Each few seconds she glanced at Shed, looked back, more subdued.
Yep, you're in a heap of trouble, sweetheart.
She gave us the song and dance I'd expected from Shed. We ignored it, knowing it was bullshit. Otto cleaned up, then bound her hands and ankles. He parked her in a chair. I made sure it faced away from Shed. The poor bastard had to breathe. I sat down opposite the girl and began to question her. Shed said he had told her almost everything. I wanted to know if she knew anything about Raven that could give him or us away. I got no chance to find out. There was a great rush of air around the house, a roar like a tornado passing, a crack like thunder. Otto said it all.
Oh, shit. Taken.
The door blew inward. I rose, stomach twisting, heart hammering. Feather came in, looking like she'd just walked through a burning building. Wisps of smoke rose from her smoldering apparel.
What the hell? I asked.
The castle. I got too close. They almost knocked me out of the sky. What have you got?
I told my story quickly, not omitting the fact that we had allowed a corpse to get past. I indicated Shed.
One dead, trying to fight questioning. But this one is healthy. I indicated the girl.
Feather moved close to the girl. She had taken a real blast out there. I did not feel the aura of great power rigidly constrained that one usually senses in the presence of the taken, and she did not sense the life still throbbing in Maron Shed.
So young, she lifted the girl's chin. Oh, what eyes! Fire and steel! The lady will love this one.
We keep the watch, I asked, assuming she would confiscate the prisoner.
Of course. There may be others.
She faced me.
No more we'll get through. The margin is too narrow. Whisper will forgive the latest, but the next is your doom.
Yes, ma'am. Only it's hard to do and not attract the attention of the locals. We can't just go set up a roadblock.
Why not?
I explained. She had scouted the Black Castle and knew the lay of the land.
You're right, for the moment. But your company will be here soon. There'll be no need for secrecy then.
Yes, ma'am.
Feather took the girl's hand.
Come, she said.
I was amazed at how docilely our hellcat followed Feather. I went outside and watched Feather's battered carpet rise and hurry toward Durtile. One despairing cry floated in its wake. I found Shed in the doorway when I turned to go inside. I wanted to smack him for that, but controlled myself.
"Who was that?"
he asked.
"What was that?"
"Feather, one of the Taken, one of my bosses."
"Sorceress?"
"One of the greatest. Go sit. Let's talk. I need to know exactly what that girl knows about Raven and Darling." Intense questioning convinced me that Lisa did not know enough to arouse Whisper's suspicions, unless Whisper connected the name Raven with the man who had helped capture her years ago. I continued grilling Shed till first light. He practically begged to tell every filthy detail of his story. He had a big need to confess. Over coming days, when I sneaked down to the buskin, he revealed everything recorded where he appears as the focal character. I do not think I have met many men who disgusted me more. Nastier men, yes, I have encountered scores. Greater villains come by the battalion. Shed's leavening of self-pity and cowardice reduced him from those categories to an essentially pathetic level. Poor dolt. He was born to be used. And yet, there was one guttering spark in Maron Shed, reflected in his relationships with his mother, Raven, Asa, Lisa, Sal, and Darling, that he noted but did not recognize himself. He had a hidden streak of charity and decency. It was the gradual growth of that spark, with its eventual impact upon the Black Company, which makes me feel obligated to record all the earlier noxious details about that frightened little man. The morning following his capture, I rode into the city in Shed's wagon and allowed him to open the Iron Lily as usual. During the morning, I got Elmo and Goblin in for a conference. Shed was unsettled when he discovered that we all knew one another. Only through sheer luck had he not been taken earlier. Poor fellow. The grilling never ceased. Poor us. He could not tell us everything we wanted to know. "What are we going to do about the girl's father?" Elmo asked. "If there is a letter, we've got to grab it," I replied. "We can't have anybody stirring up more problems. Goblin, you take care of the papa. He's even a little suspicious. See, he has a heart attack." Sourly, Goblin nodded. He asked Shed for the father's whereabouts, departed, and returned within half an hour. "A great tragedy." He didn't have a letter. She was bluffing. But he did know too much that would come out under questioning. This business is beginning to get to me. Hunting rebels was cleaner. You knew who was who and where you stood.
I'd better get back up the hill. The Taken might not be understanding about me being down here. Elmo, better keep somebody in Shed's pocket.
Right. Pawnbroker lives there from now on. That clown takes a crap, he's holding his hand.
Goblin looked remote and thoughtful.
Raven buying a ship. Imagine that. What do you figure he was going to do?
I think he wanted to head straight out to sea, I said. I hear there are islands out there, way out. Maybe another continent. A guy could hide pretty good out there.
I went back up the hill and loafed for 2 days, except to slip off and get everything I could out of Shed. Not a damned thing happened. Nobody else tried to make a delivery. I guess Shed was the only fool in the body business. Sometimes I looked at those grim black battlements and wondered. They had taken a crack at Feather. Somebody in there knew the Taken meant trouble. How long before they realized they had been cut off and did something to get the meat supply moving again?
Chapter 31 Juniper, the Return. Shed was still rattled 2 days after his capture. Each time he looked across the common room and saw one of those Black Company bastards, he started falling apart again. He was living on borrowed time. He was not sure what use they had for him, but he was sure that when he was used up, they would dump him with the garbage. Some of his babysitters clearly thought him trash. He could not refute their viewpoint in his own mind. He was behind his counter, washing mugs, when Asa walked through the door. He dropped a mug. Asa met his eye for only an instant, sidled around the L, and headed upstairs. Shed took a deep breath and followed. The man called Pawnbroker was a step behind when he reached the head of the stair, moving as silent as death. He had a knife ready for business. Shed stepped into what had been Raven's room. Pawnbroker remained outside.
"What the hell are you doing here, Asa? The Inquisitors are after you. About that catacombs business. Bullock himself went south looking for you."
"Easy, Shed, I know. He caught up with us. It got hairy. We left him cut up, but he'll mend, and he'll come back looking for you. I came to warn you. You've got to get out of Juniper."
"Oh, no," Shed said softly. "Another tooth in the jaws of fate. Been considering that anyway. That would not tell Pawnbroker anything he could not guess for himself.
Things have gotten rotten here. I've started looking for a buyer."
Not true, but he would before day's end. For some reason, Asa's return restored his heart. Maybe just because he felt he had an ally, somebody who shared his troubles. Most of the story poured out. Pawnbroker did not take exception. He did not make an appearance. Asa had changed. He did not seem shocked. Shed asked why not.
"Because I spent so much time with Raven. He told me stories that would curl your hair, about the days before he came to Juniper."
"How is he?"
"Dead."
"Dead?" Shed gasped.
What?
Pawnbroker bulled through the doorway.
Did you say Raven was dead?
Asa looked at Pawnbroker, at Shed, at Pawnbroker again.
Shed, you bastard!
You shut up, Asa, Shed snapped. You haven't got the faintest what's happened while you were gone. Pawnbroker is a friend. Sort of.
Pawnbroker, eh? Like from the Black Company?
Pawnbroker's eyebrows rose.
Raven been talking?
He had some tales about the old days.
Uh-huh. Right, buddy. That's me. Let's get back to Raven being dead.
Asa looked at Shed. Shed nodded. Tell us.
Okay. I don't really know what happened. We were clearing out after our mix-up with Bullock. Running. His hired thugs caught us by surprise. We're hiding in some woods outside of town when all of a sudden he starts screaming and jumping around. It don't make no sense to me.
Asa shook his head. His face was pale and sweaty.
Go on,
Shed urged gently.
Shed, I don't know.
What? Pawnbroker demanded.
I don't know. I didn't hang around.
Shed grimaced. That was the Asa he knew.
You're a real buddy, fellow,
Pawnbroker said.
Look,
Shed motioned for silence. Asa said,
Shed, you've got to get out of Juniper, fast. Any day a ship could bring a letter from Bullock.
But
it's better down there than we thought, Shed. You got money? You're all right. They don't care about the catacombs. Think it was a big joke on the custodians. That's how Bullock found us. Everybody was laughing about the raid. There was even some guys talking about getting up an expedition to come clean them out.
How did anybody find out about the catacombs, Asa? Only you and Raven knew. Asa looked abashed.
Yeah, thought so. Had to brag, didn't you?
He was confused and frightened and starting to take it out on Asa. He did not know what to do. He had to get out of Juniper, like Asa said, but how to give his watchdogs the slip, especially when they knew he had to try.
There's a ship at the Tulwar dock that leaves for Miadenville in the morning, Shed. I had the captain hold passage for two. Should I tell him you'll be there, too?
Pawnbroker stepped into position to block the doorway.
Neither one of you will be there. Some friends of mine want to talk to you.
Shed, what is this? Panic edged Asa's voice. Shed looked at Pawnbroker. The mercenary nodded. Shed poured out most everything. Asa did not understand. Shed did not himself, because his chaperones had not told him everything, so there was some sense missing from the picture he had. Pawnbroker was alone at the Lily. Shed suggested,
"How about I go get Goblin?"
Pawnbroker smiled.
"How about we just wait? But somebody will turn up. We'll wait. Let's go downstairs.
You," he indicated Asa with his blade. "Don't get any funny ideas." Shed said,
"Be careful, Asa. These are the guys Raven was scared of."
"I will. I heard enough from Raven."
"That's a pity, too," Pawnbroker said. "Croker and Elmo aren't going to like that. Down, gents. Shed, just go on about your business."
"Somebody's liable to recognize Asa," Shed warned.
"We'll take a chance. Git!"
Pawnbroker stood aside and allowed both men to pass. Downstairs, he seated Asa at the shadowiest table and joined him, cleaning his nails with his knife. Asa watched in fascination. Seeing ghosts, Shed figured. He could get away now if he wanted to sacrifice Asa. They wanted Asa more than they wanted him. If he just headed out through the kitchen, Pawnbroker would not come after him. His sister-in-law came from the kitchen, a platter balanced on each hand. "When you get a minute, Sal." And when she got the minute,
"You think you and the kids could run the place for me for a few weeks?"
"Sure. Why?"
She looked puzzled, but she glanced quickly into the shadows. "I might have to go somewhere for a while. I'd feel better if I knew somebody in the family was running the place. I don't really trust Lisa."
"You haven't heard from her yet?"
"No. You'd have thought she'd turn up when her father died, wouldn't you?"
"Maybe she's shacked up somewhere and hasn't heard yet."
Sal did not sound convinced. In fact, Shed suspected she thought he had something to do with the disappearance. Way too many people had disappeared around him. He was afraid she would do her sums and decide he had had something to do with Wally disappearing, too. There's one rumor I heard said she got arrested. Keep an eye out for Mom. She's got good people taking care of her, but they need supervising.
Where are you going, Marin?
I don't know yet. He was afraid it might be just a way up the hill, to the enclosure. If not that, then certainly somewhere, away from everything that had happened here. Away from these merciless men and their even less merciful employers. Have to talk to Asa about the Taken. Maybe Raven had told him something. He wished he could get a moment with Asa to plan something. The two of them making a break. But not on the Tolwar ship. Asa had mentioned that, damn him. Some other ship, headed south. What had become of Raven's big new vessel? And Darling? He went over to the table. Asa, what happened to Darling? Asa reddened. He stared at his folded hands.
I don't know, Shed. Honest, I panicked. I just ran for the first ship headed north.
Shed walked away, shaking his head in disgust, leaving the girl alone like that. Asa hadn't changed much after all. The one called Goblin came through the door. He began to beam at Asa before Pawnbroker said anything.
My, he said. Is this who I think it is, Pawn?
You got it. The infamous Asa himself, home from the wars. And does he have stories to tell? Goblin seated himself opposite Asa. He wore a big frog grin.
Such as?
Mainly, he claims Raven is dead. Goblin's smile vanished. In an eye's blink, he became deadly serious. He made Asa tell his story again while staring into a mug of wine. When he finally looked up, he was subdued.
Better talk this over with Elmo and Croker. Good job, Pawnbroker. I'll take him. Keep your eye on friend Shed.
Shed winced. In the back of his head had lain the small hope that both would leave with Asa. His mind was made up. He would flee at the first opportunity. Get south, change his name, use his gold pieces to buy into an inn, behave himself so thoroughly nobody would notice him ever again. Asa showed a spark of rebellion.
Who the hell do you guys think you are? Suppose I don't want to go anywhere.
Goblin smiled nastily, muttered something under his breath. Dark brown smoke drifted out of his mug, illuminated by a bloody inner glow. Goblin stared at Asa. Asa stared at the mug, unnerved. The smoke coalesced, formed a small head-like shape. Points began glowing where eyes might be. Goblin said,
"My little friend wants you to argue. He feeds on pain, and he hasn't eaten for a long time. I've had to keep a low profile in Juniper."
Asa's eyes kept getting bigger. So did Shed's. Sorcery. He had sensed it in the thing called the Taken, but that had not upset him much. It had been removed, not experienced. Something that had happened to Lisa, out of sight. But this... it was a minor sorcery, to be sure, some slight trick, but it was sorcery in a city which saw none other than that involved in the slow growth of the Black Castle. The dark arts hadn't gained any following in Juniper.
"All right," Asa said. "All right."
His voice was high and thin and squeaky, and he was trying to push his chair back. Pawnbroker prevented him. Goblin grinned.
"I see Raven mentioned Goblin. Good. You'll behave. Come along."
Pawnbroker released Asa's chair. The little man followed Goblin docilely. Shed sidled over and looked into Goblin's mug. "Nothing." He frowned. Pawnbroker grinned.
"Cute trick, eh?"
"Yeah." Shed took the mug to his sink. When Pawnbroker was not looking, he dropped it into the trash. He was more scared than ever. How did he get away from a sorcerer? His head filled with tales he had heard from southern sailors.
bad business wizards were. He wanted to weep.
Chapter 32 Juniper, Visitors. Goblin brought me the man Asa and insisted we wait for Elmo before questioning him. He had sent someone to dig Elmo out of Durtal, where he was trying to placate Whisper. Whisper was getting goosed by the lady regular and taking it out on anyone handy. Goblin was unsettled by what he had learned. He did not play the usual game and try to make me guess what was going on. He blurted, "Asa says him and Raven had a run-in with Bullock. Raven is dead. He lit out. Darling is on her own down there." Excitement? Better believe it. I was ready to put the little man to the question then and there, but I controlled myself. Elmo was a while showing up. Goblin and I got damned antsy before he did, while Asa worked himself up for a stroke. The wait proved worthwhile. Elmo did not come alone. The first hint was a faint but sour odor that seemed to come from the fireplace, where I'd had a small fire lighted. Just in case, you know, with a few iron rods set by, ready to be heated, so Asa could look them over and think, and maybe convince himself he ought not to leave anything out.
"What's that smell?" somebody asked. "Croaker, you let that cat in again?"
"I kicked him out after he sprayed my boots," I said, "like halfway down the hill. Maybe he got the firewood before he left." The odor grew stronger. It wasn't really obnoxious, just mildly irritating. We took turns examining the firewood. Nothing. I was in the middle of a third search for the source when the fire caught my eye. For a second, I saw a face in the flames. My heart nearly stopped. For half a minute, I was in a panic, nothing but the face's presence having registered. I considered every evil that could happen. Taken watching, the lady watching, the things from the Black Castle, maybe the Dominator himself peeking through our fire. Then something calm, back in the far marches of mind, reiterated something I hadn't noticed because I had no reason to expect it. The face in the flames had had only one eye. "One eye," I said without thinking. "That little bastard is in Juniper." Goblin spun toward me. Eyes wide. He sniffed the air. His famous grin split his face.
"You're right, Croaker. Absolutely right. That stink is the little skunk himself. Should have recognized it straight off."
I glanced at the fire. The face did not reappear. Goblin mused.
"What would be a suitable welcome?"
"Figure the captain sent him."
"Probably. Be logical to send him or Silent ahead."
"Do me a favor, Goblin."
"What?"
"Don't give him no special welcome." Goblin looked deflated. It had been a long time. He did not want to miss an opportunity to refresh his acquaintance with One Eye with a flash and a bang.
"Look," I said, "he's here on the sneak. We don't want the Taken to know. Why give them anything to sniff out?"
Bad choice of words. The smell was about to drive us outside.
"Yeah," Goblin grumbled. "Wish the captain had sent Silent. I was all worked up for this. Had him the biggest surprise of his life."
"So get him later. Meantime, why not clear this smell out? Why not get his goat by just ignoring him?" He thought about it. His eyes gleamed.
"Yeah," he said,
and I knew he had shaped my suggestion to his own warped sense of humor. A fist hammered on the door. It startled me, even though I was expecting it. One of the men let Elmo in. One Eye came in behind Elmo, grinning like a little black mongoose about to eat snake. We paid him no heed, because the captain came in behind him. The captain, the last man I expected to reach Juniper before the company itself.
"Sir," I blurted, "what the hell are you doing here?"
He lumbered to the fire, extended his hands. Summer had begun to fade, but it was not that cold. He was as bear-like as ever, though he had lost weight and aged. It had been a hard march indeed.
"Stork," he replied.
I frowned, looked at Elmo. Elmo shrugged, said, "I sent Stork with the message." The captain expanded.
"Stork didn't make any sense. What's this about Raven?"
Raven, of course, had been his closest friend before deserting. I began to get a glimmer. I indicated Asa. "This guy was in the thick of it from the beginning. Been Raven's sidekick. He says Raven is dead, down... What's the name of that place, Asa?"
Asa stared at the captain and one eye and swallowed about 6 times without being able to say anything. I told the captain. Raven told stories about us that turned his hair gray.
"Let's hear the story," the captain said.
He was looking at Asa. So Asa told his tale for the 3rd time, while Goblin hovered, listening for the clunk of untruth. He ignored one eye in the most masterful show of ignoring I've ever seen, and all for naught. The captain dropped Asa completely the moment he finished his tale. A matter of style, I think. He wanted the information to percolate before he trotted it out for re-examination. He had me review everything I had experienced since arriving in Juniper. I presumed he had gotten Elmo's story already. I finished. He observed,
"You're too suspicious of the Taken. The Limper has been with us all along. He doesn't act like there's anything up."
If anyone had a cause for malice toward us, the Limper did. "Nevertheless," I said, "there are wheels within wheels within wheels with the Lady and the Taken. Maybe they didn't tell him anything because they figured he couldn't keep it secret."
"Maybe,"
the captain admitted. He shuffled around, occasionally gave Asa a puzzled look.
"Whatever. Let's not get Whisper wondering any more than she is. Play it close. Pretend you're not suspicious. Do your job. One Eye and his boys will be around to back you up."
Sure, I thought. Against the Taken. If the Limper is with the company, how did you get away? If he knows you're gone, the word will be out to the Lady, won't it?
He shouldn't find out. We haven't spoken in months. He stays to himself. Bored, I think.
What about the Barrowland? I was primed to find out everything that had happened during the company's long trek, for I had nothing in the annals concerning the majority of my comrades. But it was not yet time to exhume details, just to feel for high points.
"We never saw it," the captain said. "According to the Limper, Journey and the Lady are working that end. We can expect a major move as soon as we have Juniper under control."
"We haven't done squat to prepare," I said. "The Taken kept us busy fussing about the Black Castle."
"Ugly place, isn't it?"
He looked us over.
"I think you might have gotten more done had you not been so paranoid."
"Sir?"
"Most of your trail covering strikes me as needless and a waste of time. The problem was Raven's, not yours, and he solved it in typical fashion, without help."
He glared at Asa.
"In fact, the problem seems solved for all time."
He had not been here and had not felt the pressures, but I did not mention that. Instead, I asked, "Goblin, you figure Asa is telling the truth?"
Warily, Goblin nodded.
"How about you, One Eye? You catch any false notes?"
The little black man responded with a cautious negative.
"Asa, Raven should have had a bunch of papers with him. He ever mentioned them?"
Asa looked puzzled. He shook his head.
"He have a trunk or something that he wouldn't let anybody near."
Asa seemed baffled by the direction my questions had taken. The others did, too. Only Silent knew about those papers. Silent, and maybe Whisper, who had possessed them once herself.
"Asa, anything he treated unusually?"
A light dawned in the little man's mind.
"There was a crate, about the size of a coffin. I remember making a joke about it. He said something cryptic about it being somebody's ticket to the grave."
I grinned. The papers still existed.
"What did he do with that crate down there?"
"I don't know."
"Asa?"
"Honest, I only saw it a couple times on the ship. I never thought anything about it."
"What are you getting at, Croker?"
the captain asked.
"I have a theory,
just based on what I know about Raven and Asa. Everyone frowned. Generally, what we know about Asa suggests he's a character Raven wouldn't take up with on a bet. He's chicken, unreliable, too talkative. But Raven did take up with him, took him south and made him part of the team. Why? Maybe that don't bother you guys, but it does me.
I don't follow you, the captain said.
Suppose Raven wanted to disappear so people wouldn't even bother looking for him. He tried to vanish once by coming to Juniper, but we turned up. Looking for him, he thought. So what next? How about he dies in front of a witness? People don't hunt for dead men. Elmo interrupted.
You saying he staged his death and used Asa to report it so nobody would come looking?
I'm saying we ought to consider the possibility. The captain's sole response was a thoughtful, hmm.
Goblin said,
but Asa did see him die.
Maybe, and maybe he only thinks he did. We all looked at Asa. He cowered. The captain said,
take him through his story again, One-Eye. Step by step.
For 2 hours, One-Eye dragged the little man through, again and again, and we could not spot one flaw. Asa insisted he had seen Raven die, devoured from within by something snake-like, and the more my theory sprung leaks, the more I was sure it was valid. My case depends on Raven's character, I insisted, when everybody ganged up on me. There's the crate, and there's Darling. Her and a damned expensive ship that he, for God's sakes, had built. He left a trail going out of here, and he knew it. Why sail a few hundred miles and tie up to a dock when somebody is going to come looking? Why leave Shed alive behind you to tell about you being in on the raid on the catacombs? And there's no way in hell he'd leave Darling twisting in the wind. Not for a minute. He would have had arrangements made for her. You know that. My arguments were beginning to sound a little strained to me, too. I was in the position of a priest trying to sell religion. But Asa says they just left her hanging around some inn. I tell you, Raven had a plan. I bet if you went down there now, you'd find Darling gone without a trace. And if the ship is still there, that crate wouldn't be aboard.
What is this with the crate? One-Eye demanded.
I ignored him.
I think you have too much imagination, Croaker, the captain said. But on the other hand, Raven is crafty enough to pull something like that. Soon as I can spring you, figure on going down to check.
If Raven's crafty enough, how about the Taken being villainous enough to try something against us?
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
He faced One-Eye.
I want you and Goblin to save the games. Understand? Too much clowning around and the Taken will get curious. Croaker, hang on to this Asa character. You'll want him to show you where Raven died. I'm heading back to the outfit. Elmo, come ride with me part way.
So, a little private business. Bet it had to do with my suspicions about the Taken. After a while, you get so used to some people, you can almost read their minds.
Chapter 33 Juniper, the Encounter. Things changed after the captain's visit. The men became more alert. Elmo's influence waxed, while mine waned. A less wishy-washy, more inflexible tone characterized the company deputation. Every man became ready to move at an instant's notice. Communications improved dramatically, while time available for sleep declined painfully. None of us were ever out of touch more than 2 hours, and Elmo found excuses to get everyone but himself out of Durtile, into places where the Taken would have trouble finding them. Asa became my ward out on the Black Castle slope. Tension mounted. I felt like one of a flock of chickens poised to scatter the moment a fox landed among us. I tried to bleed off my shakiness by updating the annals. I had let them slide sadly, seldom having done more than keep notes. When the tension became too much for me, I walked uphill to stare at the Black Castle. It was an intentional risk-taking, like that of a child who crawls out a tree branch overhanging a deadly fall. The closer I approached the castle, the more narrow my concentration. At 200 yards, all other cares vanished. I felt the dread of that place down to my ankle bones and the shallows of my soul. At 200 yards, I felt what it meant to have the shadow of the Dominator overhanging the world. I felt what the lady felt when she considered her husband's potential resurrection. Every emotion became edged with a hint of despair. In a way, the Black Castle was more than a gateway through which the world's great old evil might reappear. It was a concretization of metaphorical concepts and a living symbol. It did things a great cathedral does. Like a cathedral, it was far more than an edifice. I could stare at its obsidian walls and grotesque decoration, recall Shed's stories, and never avoid dipping into the cesspool of my own soul, never avoid searching myself for the essential decency shelved through most of my adult life. That castle was, if you like, a moral landmark, if you had a brain, if you had any sensitivity at all. There were times when One Eye, Goblin, Elmo, or another of the men accompanied me. Not one of them went away untouched. They could stand there with me, talking trivialities about its construction, or weightily about its significance in the company's future, and all the while something would be happening inside. I do not believe in evil absolute. I have recounted that philosophy in specific elsewhere in the annals, and it affects my every observation throughout my tenure as analyst. I believe in our side and theirs, with the good and evil decided after the fact by those who survive. Among men, you seldom find the good with one standard and the shadow with another. In our war with the rebel, 8 and 9 years ago, we served the side perceived as the shadow. Yet we saw far more wickedness practiced by the adherents of the White Rose than by those of the Lady. The villains of the peace were at least straightforward. The world knows where it stands with the Lady. It is the rebel whose ideals and morals conflict with fact, becoming as changeable as the weather and as flexible as a snake. But I digress. The Black Castle has that effect. Makes you amble off into all the byways and cul-de-sacs and false trails you have laid down during your life. It makes you reassess. Makes you want to take a stand somewhere, even if on the black side. Leaves you impatient with your own malleable morality. I suspect that is why Juniper decided to pretend the place did not exist. It is an absolute, demanding absolutes in a world with a preference for relatives. Darling was in my thoughts often while I stood below those black, glossy walls, for she was the castle's antipode when I was up there. The white pole, and absolute in opposition to what the black castle symbolized. I had not been much in her presence since realizing what she was, but I could recall being morally unnerved by her, too. I wonder how she would affect me now, after having had years to grow. From what Shed said, she did not reek the way the castle did. His main interest in her had been hustling her upstairs, and Raven had not been driven into puritanical channels. If anything, he had slipped farther into the darkness, though for the highest of motives. Possibly there was a message there, an observation upon means to ends. Here was Raven, who had acted with the pragmatic amorality of a prince of hell, all so he could save the child who represented the best hope of the world against the Lady and the Dominator. Oh, 'twould be marvelous if the world and its moral questions were like some game board, with plain black players and white, and fixed rules, and nary a shade of gray. Even Asa and Shed could be made to feel the aura of the castle if you took them up during the daytime and made them stand there looking at those fell walls. Shed, especially. Shed had achieved a position where he could afford conscience and uncertainty. I mean, he had none of the financial troubles that had plagued him earlier, and no prospect of digging himself a hole with us watching him. So he could reflect upon his place in things and become disgusted with himself. More than once I took him up and watched as that deep spark of hidden decency flared, twisted him upon a rack of inner torment. I do not know how Elmo did it. Maybe he went without sleep for a few weeks. But when the company came down out of the Wallanders, he had an occupation plan prepared. It was crude, to be sure, but better than any of us expected. I was in the buskin at Shed's Iron Lily when the first rumors raged down the waterfront and stirred one of the most massive states of confusion I've ever seen. Shed's wood-cellar neighbor swept into the Lily, announced, "There's an army coming down out of the pass. Foreigners. Thousands of them. They say..." During the following hour, a dozen patrons brought the news. Each time the army was larger and its purpose more obscure. Nobody knew what the company wanted. Various witnesses assigned motives according to their own fears. Few came anywhere near the mark. Though the men were weary after so long a march, they spread through the city quickly, the larger units guided by Elmo's men. Candy brought a reinforced company into the buskin. The worst slums are always the first sign of rebellion, we've found. There were few violent confrontations. Juniper's citizens were taken by surprise and had no idea what to fight about anyway. Most just turned out to watch. I got myself back up to my squad. This was the time the Taken would do their deed, if they planned anything. Nothing happened. As I might have guessed, knowing that men from our forerunner party were guiding the new arrivals. Indeed, nobody got in touch with me up there for another 2 days. By then, the city was pacified. Every key point was in our hands. Every state building, every arsenal, every strong point, even the custodian's headquarters in the enclosure. And life went on as usual. What little trouble there was came when rebel refugees tried to start an uprising, accurately accusing the Duke of having brought the lady to Juniper. The people of Juniper didn't much care. There were problems in the buskin, though. Elmo wanted to straighten the slum out. Some of the slum dwellers didn't want to be straightened. He used Candy's company forcefully, cracking the organization of the crime bosses. I did not see the necessity, but wiser heads feared the gangs could become the focus of future resistance. Anything with that potential had to be squashed immediately. I think there was a hope the move would win popular favor, too. Elmo brought the lieutenant to my hillside shack the third day after the company's arrival. "How goes it?" I asked. The lieutenant had aged terribly since I had seen him last. The passage westward had been grim. "City's secure," he said. "Stinking dump, isn't it?" "Better believe. It's all snake's belly. What's up?" Elmo said, "He needs a look at the target." I lifted an eyebrow. The lieutenant said, "The limper says we're going to take this place. I don't know how soon. Captain wants me to look it over." "Fun times tomorrow," I muttered. "Ain't going to grab it on the sneak." I donned my coat. It was chilly up on the slopes. Elmo and One Eye tagged along when I took the lieutenant up. He eyeballed the castle, deep in thought. Finally, he said, "I don't like it. Not even a little bit." He felt the cold dread of the place. "I got a man who's been inside," I said. "But don't let the Taken know. He's supposed to be dead."
"What can he tell me?"
"Not much. He's only been there at night, in a court behind the gate."
The Taken have a girl up at Durtile, too. I talked to her. She couldn't tell me nothing. Only in there once, and was too scared to look around."
"She's still alive?"
"Yeah.
That's the one you caught? Yeah, she's alive. Lady's orders, apparently. Nasty little witch. Let's hike around it. We got onto the far slope, where the going was rough, to the accompaniment of constant crabbing by One Eye. The lieutenant stated the obvious. No getting at it from here, not without help from the Taken.
Going to take a big lot of help to get at it from any direction.
He looked me a question. I told him about Feather's troubles the night we took Shed and his barmaid. Anything since? Nope. Not before, either. My man who's been inside never saw anything extraordinary, either. But, damn it, the thing connects with the Barrowland. It's got the Dominator behind it. You know it's not going to be a pushover. They know there's trouble out here. One Eye made a squeaking sound. What? The lieutenant snapped. One Eye pointed. We all looked up the wall, which loomed a good 60 feet above us. I did not see anything. Neither did the lieutenant. What? He asked again.
Something was watching us. Nasty-looking critter.
I saw it, too, Elmo volunteered. Long, skinny, yellowish guy, with eyes like a snake. I considered the wall.
How could you tell from here?
Elmo shivered and shrugged.
I could, and I didn't like it. Looked like he wanted to bite me.
We dragged on through brush and over boulders, keeping one eye on the castle, the other on the down slope. Elmo muttered.
Hungry eyes, that's what they were.
We reached the ridgeline west of the castle. The lieutenant paused.
How close can you get?
I shrugged.
I haven't had the balls to find out.
The lieutenant moved here, there, as if sighting on something.
Let's bring up some prisoners and find out.
I sucked spittle between my teeth, then said, "You won't get the locals anywhere near the place."
"Think not. How about in exchange for a pardon? Candy's rounded up half the villains in the buskin. Got a regular anti-crime crusade going. He gets 3 complaints about somebody. He nabs them."
"Sounds a little simple," I said. We were moving around for a look at the castle gate. By simple, I meant simplistic. Not easy. The lieutenant chuckled. Months of hardship had not sapped his bizarre sense of humor.
Simple minds respond to simple answers. A few months of Candy's reforms, and the Duke will be a hero.
I understood the reasoning. Juniper was a lawless city, ruled by regional strongmen. There were hordes of Sheds who lived in terror, continuously victimized. Anyone who lessened the terror would win their affection. Adequately developed, that affection would survive later excesses. I wondered, though, if the support of weaklings was worth much, or if, should we successfully infect them with courage, we might not be creating trouble for ourselves later. Take away daily domestic oppression, and they might imagine oppression on our part. I have seen it before. Little people have to hate, have to blame someone for their own inadequacies. But that was not the problem of the moment. The moment demanded immediate, vigorous, violent attention. The castle gate popped open as we came in line. A half dozen wild beings in black rushed us. A fog of lethargy settled upon me, and I found fear fading the moment it sparked into existence. By the time they were halfway to us, all I wanted was to lie down. Pain filled my limbs. My head ached. Cramps knotted my stomach. The lethargy vanished. One Eye was doing strange things, dancing, yelping like a wolf pup, throwing his hands around like wounded birds. His big, weird hat flew off and tumbled with the breeze downhill till it became tangled in the brush. Between yelps, he snapped, "Do something, you idiots! I can't hold them forever!" Shang! Elmo's sword cleared its scabbard. The lieutenants did the same. I was carrying nothing but a long dagger. I whipped it out and joined the rush. The castle creatures stood frozen, surprise in their ophidian eyes. The lieutenant reached them first, stopped, wound up,
took a mighty two-handed swing. He lugs a hanger that is damned near an executioner's sword. A blow like that would have severed the necks of three men. It did not remove the head of his victim, though it did bite deep. Blood sprayed the three of us. Elmo went with a thrust, as did I. His sword drove a foot into his victim. My dagger felt like it had hit soft wood. It sank but 3 inches into my victim, probably not deeply enough to reach anything vital. I yanked my blade free, poked around in my medical knowledge for a better killing point. Elmo kicked his victim in the chest to get his weapon free. The lieutenant had the best weapon and approach. He hacked another neck while we diddled around. Then One Eye lost it. The eyes of the castle creatures came alive. Pure fiery venom burned there. I feared the two not yet harmed would swarm all over us. But the lieutenant threw a wild stroke, and they retreated. The one I had wounded staggered after them. He fell before he reached the gate. He kept crawling. The gate closed in his face.
"So," the lieutenant said, "there's a few lads we don't have to face later. My commendation, One Eye."
He spoke calmly enough, but his voice was up in the squeak range. His hands shook. It had been close. We would not have survived had One Eye not come along.
"I think I've seen enough for today. Let's hike."
90% of me wanted to run as fast as I could. 10% stuck to business.
"Let's drag one of these bastards along."
It croaked out of a mouth dry with fear.
"What the hell for?" Elmo demanded. "So I can carve it up and see what it is."
"Yeah." The lieutenant squatted and grabbed a body under the arms. It struggled feebly. Shuddering, I took hold of booted feet and hoisted. The creature folded in the middle.
"Hell with that," the lieutenant said.
He dropped his end, joined me.
"You pull that leg, I'll pull this one."
We pulled. The body slid sideways. We started bickering about who should do what.
"You guys want to stop crapping around?" One Eye snarled.
He stabbed a wrinkled black finger. I looked back. Creatures had appeared on the battlements. I felt an increase in the dread the castle inspired.
"Something's happening," I said, and headed downhill, never letting go of the body.
The lieutenant came along. Our burden took a beating going through the rock and brush. Wham! Something hit the slope like the stamp of a giant's foot. I felt like a roach fleeing a man who hated cockroaches and had his stomping boots on. There was another stamp, more earth-shaking.
"Oh, shit," Elmo said.
He came past me, arms and legs pumping. One Eye was right behind him, flying low, gaining ground. Neither offered to help. A third thump, and a fourth, about equally spaced in time, each closer than the last. The last sent chunks of stone and dead brush arcing overhead. 50 yards downslope, One Eye halted, whirled, did one of his magic things. A chunk of pale blue fire exploded in his upraised hands, went roaring up the hill, moaning past me less than a foot away. The lieutenant and I passed One Eye. A fifth giant stomp spattered our backs with shards of rock and brush. One Eye let out a mad howl and ran again. He yelled,
"That was my best shot! Better dump that clown and scatter!"
He pulled away, bounding like a hare fleeing hounds. A scream filled the valley of the port. A pair of dots came hurtling over from the southern slope, almost too fast for the eye to follow. They passed with a hollow, deep roar and boomed like a god's drum behind us. I was not sure, but it seemed the dots were connected. Another pair appeared, revolving about a common center. I got a better look. Yes, they were connected. They roared. They boomed. I glanced back. The face of the black castle had vanished behind a wall of color, like paint thrown against, then running down a pane of glass to which it would not adhere.
"Taken her on the job,"
the lieutenant panted. His eyes were wild, but he clung to his side of our burden.
The damned creature got hung up. Panicky, we hacked its clothing free from a thorn bush. I kept looking up, expecting something to come down and smash us all over the slope. Another pair of balls arrived, spraying color. They did no obvious harm, but kept the castle occupied. We freed our booty, hurried on. A different sort of dot pair came, dropping from high above. I pointed. Feather and Whisper. The Taken plunged toward the black castle, preceded by a high-pitched shriek. Fire enveloped the castle wall. Obsidian seemed to melt and run like candle wax, shifting the already grotesque decorations into forms even more bizarre. The Taken pulled out, gained altitude, came around for another pass. In the interim, another pair of dots screamed across the port valley and painted the plains of the air. It would have been a great show if I had not been so damned busy getting away. The slope resounded to the stamp of an invisible giant. A circle 15 feet across and 5 deep appeared above us. Sticks and stones flew. It missed by only 12 feet. The impact knocked us down. A line of like imprints marched back up the slope. Mighty though that blow was, it was less forceful than its predecessors. Feather and Whisper swooped again, and again the face of the black castle melted, ran, shifted form. Then thunder racked the air. Bam, bam! Both Taken vanished in clouds of smoke. They wobbled out, fighting for control of their carpets. Both smoldered the way Feather had the night we captured Shed. They fought for altitude. The castle turned its entire attention to them. The lieutenant and I made our escape. Chapter 34 Juniper Flight. The Lily shuddered several times. Shed was doing mugs and wondering which of his customers were Black Company. The shaking made him nervous. Then a shriek flashed overhead, rising, then falling as it whipped away north. A moment later, the earth shivered again, strong enough to rattle crockery. He rushed into the street. One small, cunning part of him kept watching his customers, trying to determine who was watching him. His chance of escape had lessened drastically with the advent of the company. He no longer knew who was who. They all knew him. He hit the street as a second shriek came from the direction of the enclosure. He followed pointing hands. A pair of balls, joined by a cord, whipped away to the north. Seconds later, all Juniper was illuminated by a party-colored glare.
"The Black Castle," people said. "They hit the Black Castle."
Shed could see it from his street. It had vanished behind a curtain of color. Terror gripped his heart. He could not understand it. He was safe down here, wasn't he? Wasn't he? The company had great wizards supporting it. They would not let the castle do anything. A mighty hammer blow threw stuff around the north slope. He could not see what was happening, but instantly sensed that the castle had struck at someone. Possibly that croaker who was up there keeping the place isolated. Maybe the castle was trying to open the road. Crowd Yammer directed his attention to 2 dots dropping from the blue. Fire enveloped the castle. Obsidian shifted form, writhing, then found its normal shape again. The flying attackers soared, turned. Another pair of balls hurtled in, apparently thrown from Durtile. And down came the carpet riders. Shed knew who they were and what was happening, and he was terrified. Around him, the buskin, taken unawares, went berserk. He retained the presence of mind to consider his own position. Here, there, members of the Black Company were running for battle stations. Squads formed up, hurried off. Pairs of soldiers took stations apparently assigned against times when rioting and looting looked possible. Nowhere did Shed see anyone identifiable as his babysitter. He slipped back inside the Lily, upstairs, into his room, dug into his secret place. He stuffed gold and silver into his pockets,
dithered over his amulet, then hung it around his neck under his clothing. He scanned the room once, saw nothing else he wanted to take, hurried back downstairs. There was no one in the common room but Sal, who stood at the door watching the display on the north slope. He'd never seen her more homebody and calm. "Sal?"
"Marin, is it time?"
"Yes. I'm leaving 20 leva in the box. You'll do fine as long as the soldiers keep coming in."
"Is that up there what's been going on?"
"That's where it's been headed. It'll probably get worse. They're here to destroy the castle, if they can."
"Where are you going?"
"I don't know." He honestly did not. "Wouldn't tell you if I did. They would find out from you."
"When will you be back?"
"Maybe never. Certainly not before they pull out.